Green greetings. Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Welcome to the Green Front. D.R. Tucker is joining me for our program, at least for the first half. Very excited to have Roz Savage, friend of the program, longtime friend. For the first few minutes, she's going to update us on her postponed voyage across the Atlantic for good reason, and it has a climate change connection, wouldn't you know? That trip was supposed to happen about a month ago. She's going to tell us why it didn't happen and what's next for the solo ocean rower, my shero, Roz Savage. After that, we're going to check in with a couple of great writers from grist.org. I've always talked about Grist as one of the best sources for news you can use. Gloom and doom with a sense of humor was one of their slogans, and they're very clever. They're very comprehensive in their coverage of the environment, especially with emphasis on climate change. Very excited to welcome David Roberts back to the program today. Also, we'll be speaking with Grist Greg Hanscom. He's a senior writer for Grist as well, who just got back from Rio de Janeiro. Going to find out about what happened and what didn't happen at Rio Plus 20, the Earth Summit. So without further delay, want to welcome Roz to the program. Hey, Roz, speaking to you from across that pond you didn't cross this time.
Yes, it was considerably quicker, but a lot less interesting taking the plane back to England, I have to say.
A little more carbon intensive, but given that you would have been rowing, not alone this time, but with a crewmate, tell us what happened that caused you to have to take a plane instead.
Well, the plan was to set out from St. John's in Newfoundland in Canada to row back to Britain to arrive in time for the Olympics. And although I tried to retire from ocean rowing last year, when I was invited to step into this project, I just thought what an amazing opportunity this would be. So we were there in St. John's and on standby to leave. And we were getting this kind of drip, so to speak, of information from the locals saying, well, you do realize there's a lot more ice around this year than ever before. And we started doing our research, and we found out that 2 years ago, an enormous chunk of ice broke off from a glacier in Greenland. This chunk was about four times the size of Manhattan. And since then, this ice has been, each summer as the ice melts, these big bergs have been coming down from the Arctic. And the oil industry, ironically, is very concerned about this because their oil rigs off the coast of Canada are in the firing line of these big bergs coming past. So they actually ended up being our best source of information about what was going on out there. And it just turned out that if we'd have run into a fragment of ice breaking off from one of these icebergs, then that would have had very dire consequences for us. And when we asked a local expert for his opinion on the likelihood of that collision, he said, pretty much 100%. And, you know, when you set out to row across the ocean, you sign up for a lot of risks. The North Atlantic was always going to be challenging. It was going to be cold, foggy, rough, generally nasty. But we just didn't bank on this exceptionally bad for chunks of ice. And as my crewmate said, we came here to do something inspiring, not do something stupid. And so we just decided that discretion was the best part of valor and called it off this year.
Well, I'm sure after your mother, I was the second most relieved person, or maybe among the legion of fans who were breathing a collective sigh of relief if there was any danger there as we were following your concerns there. I'm so glad you made that decision. And it is ironic. And for those who don't know, Roz Savage has been rowing across oceans on her own, breaking all kinds of records. And she does it to raise awareness about the plight of the oceans, in particular what's happening with climate change and warming of the oceans. And we'll have more to say about that in a second in terms of news coverage of that problem. And so ironic that it is this glacier that these glaciers that are breaking apart that caused you to at least delay this trip. You had actually hung up your oars after the last crossing. So for those who don't know about your amazing feats, just give us a quick update on what you had accomplished and how you felt that you had really, you know, done everything you could possibly do and how you ended up about to go on this second Atlantic crossing before you wisely postponed that.
Well, I had this sort of blinding flash of inspiration about 8 years ago when I had stepped out of my old materialistic London yuppie lifestyle and had started to actually just wise up and see things as they are. And along with that came my environmental epiphany. I realized that we are trashing the planet. Enough of people are aware of this. And I just had this burning mission to do what I could to raise awareness of that. And the fact that I'd rowed back in college was enough to give me this happy delusion that rowing across oceans was something I was vaguely qualified to do. And it seemed to meet those criteria of being unusual, attention-getting, and I believe that it would provide me with this platform for my environmental message. So I set out to row across the major oceans of the world. So I did the Atlantic in 2005. I did the Pacific in three stages between 2008 and 2010. And last year I did the Indian Ocean, which entailed spending 5 months on my own at sea. And at that point, I really felt like I'd fulfilled that vision that I had 8 years ago of how I was going to use this to get the word out through my blog, through books, through public speaking, through being at conferences. I felt like I'd taken the ocean rowing chapter of my life about as far as it could go. And it was time for me to transition into a more direct form of environmental campaigning. So actually later on this year, I'm heading off to Yale for their World Fellows Program, which I think for me personally is going to be a really important transition into the next 7 or 8 year chapter of my life, finding new and more effective ways to articulate this message that we just absolutely have to urgently wise up to what we're doing. And I think I will be able to draw on my ocean rowing experiences to really get that message across. There's a lot that I've learned, not just about what's happening in different parts of the world, the impact of climate change, rising oceans, plastic pollution in the North Pacific garbage patch, etc. But also, I've learned a lot about what motivates human beings. And something that I really want to explore while I'm at Yale is, why are we not engaging more on an individual level with the vitally important issues that are going to affect every single one of us? I find it so mystifying that we're not all kind of running around doing everything that we can to reduce our environmental impact, because it's about our survival, the survival of the human race. It's about our very future. As a supposedly intelligent species, why are we just not thing with the program? And so while I'm at Yale, I'm planning to take courses in psychology and neuroscience and philosophy, and just really try and dig down a bit deeper into that, with the hope that I will find a way that maybe we can get more people engaged. So it's going to be an interesting time for sure.
Well, universities are a good place to ponder those questions, very important ones, and ones that we ask all the time, every week here on the program. Paul Ehrlich, I just listened to an interview with him on GRIST, and he, of course, is a Stanford professor who wrote Population Bomb some 40 years ago, and he's just started something called Mobsters, and we hope to have him on the show next week so you can hear more about that, because he and his wife, who works with him, have just, you know, said people don't even want solutions. The books on environmental solutions aren't selling. What is it going to take to get people to, you know, as we say, wake up and smell the carbon? So a lot of people asking that question, and we're glad you are. One of the indicators of just how insane things are, besides the fact that, you know, hell and high water is breaking loose with the fires in Colorado, flooding in Florida, all at the same time, and most meteorologists on the news not connecting those dots, the latest research on news coverage of our environmental challenges shows that the Kardashians got mentioned 40 times more often than ocean acidification. Thoughts on that, dear Roz?
Oh, I don't even know where to begin on that one. Well, I hate to sound kind of maybe a bit snobby about this, but as they say, mediocre minds talk about people, average minds talk about events, and great minds talk about ideas. I mean, I think we need to generally raise consciousness. We need to get people to rise up and be their better selves and not get so caught up in the trivia of celebrity lifestyles. I think a lot of people intuitively know that these things are important. We're not talking about intelligence here. We're just talking about a kind of deeper wisdom. I think a lot of people do actually understand on a fairly visceral, fundamental level that we are in many kinds of trouble. And we just have to kind of find, as environmentalists, we need to find a way to tap into that level of their consciousness to actually motivate them and engage them. And I think this has been an ongoing challenge for the environmental movement ever since it started, really. We've had a scientific approach with scientists putting lots of data out there. That hasn't really worked. We've had the activists who have been fantastic and passionate and have connected strongly with a sector of society, but not yet with a sufficiently large sector of society. I'm just interested in what the next level of evolution for the environmental movement is going to look like. Are we going to find a way to really connect with the masses, to reach those tipping points, to get the kind of motivation and activation that we so desperately need?
Well, if solo rowing across several oceans doesn't get people's attention and inspire the masses, I don't know what will, and I wonder that often. But thank you for all that you do and continue to do, Ron Savage. In our next segment, just coming up in a couple minutes, I know you have to jump off, we are going to talk about recent research showing that only 1% of all news coverage is environmental. This is separate from the Kardashian research, hot off the press. And yet 79% of some 1,000 Americans randomly polled said they would like to see more environmental coverage and better green coverage. So there's a little bit of a gap there. Quantifying that, I think, can only help our cause. And thank you for doing, again, amazing feats that we never stop talking about here on the Green Front, and sent so many people to your website. I'm sure you have an even larger legion of fans, as you deserve. And I'm glad to hear you're also going to be doing more public speaking. If you don't pack a room, nobody will.
Thank you, Betsy, and thank you for giving us a note of hope that more people do want to know more about what's really going on in the world. Thank you for everything that you do to spread the word.
Thanks, Roz. Roz Myshiro, you can hear why and you can see why. Go to rozsavage.com. Not only is she the most courageous, committed environmentalist I know, but she's a fabulous